This is the Get Healthy 360 podcast, where we discuss topics related to your physical, mental, financial, and spiritual health. Your host is Dr. Chris Ferguson, board certified in anesthesiology and pain management. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and you should consult your primary health care provider before making any decisions related to your health. And here's your host, Dr. Chris Ferguson. Oh, one more thing before we start. If you like this episode, please consider rating us 5 stars. We would really appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Welcome to Get Healthy 360. Today, we are lucky to have with us Sonal Chandratle. She is a physician. She's also double board certified in pediatrics and also in endocrinology. She is the chief medical officer at a large healthcare system. She is also a healthcare leader, thought leader. She has authored numerous publications and books. The specific book we're talking about today is Kids, Come On, Let's Get Healthy, a complete kids guide to healthy lifestyle. And it's available on Amazon. That came out June 26, 2022. And so what we're focusing on today is healthy eating for kids, everything you need to know. This is really timely for me as I have 2 little children and I suffer greatly trying to get them to eat. So doctor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ferguson, for inviting me, and hello to all of your viewers.
So pressing matter for me and everyone listening. So you have kids and feeding them is often a problem because they don't want to eat. So let's start off with your book. So what can people learn from your book?
I think the one big thing that not just people, but I'm focusing this for children that can learn from this book is what is healthy lifestyle. I think there are a lot of publications or a lot of resources for adults, but there are no resources for children that really talk about healthy lifestyle in a way that children could really understand. There could be stories and, you know, flowery things or just specific siloed topics, but the book that I have authored last summer really talks about healthy lifestyle for children in a very kid-friendly way with a lot of illustrations and a lot of good helpful medical information that is presented in a highly interactive way. And we focused this book toward age group 5 and above. And in fact, parents who read this book with their kids have said that this has been helpful as a resource for adults as well. So it's kind of really helpful for everybody to understand what healthy lifestyle truly is.
Oh, fantastic. And we'll include the link, the Amazon link to that book that I would encourage you to get. I know I'm going to get a copy. So let's start off with a list of questions. So how can you really ensure your child is getting a balanced diet? I know that my children tend to like everything that I don't think is healthy for them. They like potato chips. They love ramen noodles more than anything. They like it for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner. So how do you balance them eating versus not eating?
Absolutely.
Because they'll say they won't eat. They'll just say like, I'm not eating anything. If I don't get ramen noodles, I am not eating.
And Chris, the same thing, right? I have 2 young kids and I struggle with the same thing. But the key to all of this, and again, in my clinical practice where I take care of children with weight issues and with healthy weight concerns, and I hear a lot of stories from different families, and it's interesting to see it really doesn't matter from what, you know, socioeconomic or cultural strata you come from. We all as parents struggle with the same fact. So what I recommend even the families that I support is to start with baby steps. You really cannot expect children to make that huge transition from, let's say, for in terms of your family, from ramen noodles to healthy salads and quinoa and, you know, cauliflower crust pizza and that good stuff, right? So we have to acknowledge that this is something we have to do as a family together and teach our children to make those nutritious choices. So you can start off really slow where you can say, hey, ramen noodles, but we're going to add lots of vegetables to these ramen noodles the next time we eat it. So kind of those baby steps. And I know that certain families, you know, the pizza is really big in their houses. And so I recommend that's fine. Baby steps again. Let's start with decreasing the size of the crust or then loading it with vegetables and just kind of sharing with children that what is a nutritious choice. Once we start teaching them and involving them in the maybe the meal preps or grocery shopping or just thinking about the process, I think that is the key. It's not truly the food right away, because then you're going to face a lot of resistance as parents. But once you start teaching them, talking them about things and showing the value of healthy eating, then that is when true change happens and it lasts forever.
So let's say that my children who love ramen noodles, what are some of the warning signs that your kids are not getting a balanced diet?
Sure. So some of the warning signs I would say is, you know, look out if you start seeing, let's say, weight gain. So obesity, that being overweight is one of the signs where you're not seeing balanced diet. Or if you start seeing a difference in the skin texture, hair fall, you know, anything or any unhealthy sign or symptom, that is a sign of not balanced diet.
What would you say are the most important foods that you should really try to get your kids to eat?
Well, something that I just tell everybody is always incorporate lots of fruits and vegetables. And the way you look at it is try and eat different colored fruits and vegetables from the different colors of rainbow. And when I share this trick with families, this never goes to fail, because when everybody is on board with eating fruits and vegetables from the colors of the rainbow and challenging each other to do so in terms of family members, that really works well. So fruits and vegetables has to be a huge part of your diet, obviously, along with it, whole grain. So try to steer away from processed food. Try to eat whole grain, which is oat, wheat, rye, barley, or in terms of rice, if you're a rice eater, then replacing white rice with brown rice or wild rice and making those conscious changes so that you're increasing the dietary fiber, because it's loaded with nutrients and fiber at the same time. Also using protein, so not just red meat, but replacing red meat with lean meat and understanding that protein does not always come from meat. So understanding that there are lots of pulses, cereals that also give protein, including vegetables. So understanding having that knowledge about food, that yes, plant-based food also has protein, is really important. And having all of these things together, including good fat, so good fat versus saturated and trans fat, is so important to really make a wholesome diet.
Can you expand on that, say healthy fat versus unhealthy fat?
Right. So saturated versus non-saturated fat. And let me step back a little further and explain to you for your viewers who may not have adequate information about this, is our body by itself produces fat. And so we have good fat. Good fat is something that protects your heart and protects your vessels and really helps you to produce hormones. We need fat in our body to produce certain hormones. Fat is a precursor of several hormones that your body needs. The bad fat, on the other hand, if that level is increased in your body, then you have increased chances of either heart disease or a brain stroke, and obviously obesity. So it's really important for us to have that balance in the good fat, so the healthy fat, and we try to maintain it. And the way we can do is by having a decent amount of physical activity every day. And again, choosing healthy fat, such as that comes from nuts or avocado. Avocado is a great superfood that we all know about, and that has good fat. So always trying to ensure that if you're eating fat, then you choose the good fat versus the not so good fat. So when it's not so good fat, we're talking about the greasy food, or if you're frying your food, even when you're cooking at home. So it's not just food that you get outside, but if at home, if you're cooking in fat that is trans fat or saturated fat, then that is going to be unhealthy for you.
All right, so I'm going to ask you kind of a controversial question, and everyone seems to have to weigh in. But mm-hmm. What is your take on eggs?
Oh my God, I know that's a huge controversy.
Because it's such a, it's like, I know it's a really, really difficult question. Correct. And I've heard, I've interviewed other nutritionists, I've read a lot of nutrition books, and it seems like one day eggs are good, the next day eggs are bad, then they're okay. What's your personal, as a pediatric endocrinologist, take on eggs?
I absolutely agree with you that I've done my, personally, as well as even to share this information with family and patients, I've done a lot of research. In fact, I continue doing a lot of research because there are so many studies that have difference in opinion. So it really depends on what study you're looking at. And it's really equal at this point in time in literature. If you just talk about evidence, then the evidence is truly equal in terms of either eat it with egg yolks or, you know, not with egg yolks. But me personally, because since this information is still evolving, I eat my eggs without the egg yolks. That's just a personal choice. But for children, I recommend you can eat the whole egg, including the egg yolk. Obviously, now you think of eating maybe like 20 eggs in a day, then that's not a good idea if you're eating egg white as well as egg yolks. So that's the balance, right? If you're eating, let's say, 2 to 4 eggs a day, yes, you can eat egg white as well as egg yolk. And I want your viewers to understand that we need both. You know, we need the egg white as well as the egg yolk. Both of them are nutritious. And if that's your one of the important sources of nutrition, then you should be eating it. But then, like I said, if you're going to eat 17, 18 eggs, and I know that, you know, people who exercise, who build their bodies and who focus on egg protein, then yes, if you're focusing on egg as a source of protein and you're increasing that amount, then that is the time when I suggest not eating the yolk. And it also depends on what your health is. For example, if somebody who does not have any cholesterol issues or any lipid issues and you're right in terms of your annual labs, then that's great. But let's say somebody who is on medications and who's got a health issue with cholesterol or triglycerides, then that would not be a good choice, not a good idea to eat, like, you know, over 10 eggs with egg yolks. So maintaining that balance is really crucial, especially when the research is still evolving about this topic.
What are your thoughts on supplements for kids and, like, say, vitamin tablets, et cetera, and then, say, protein shakes for kids?
I love that question, Chris, because this is something that I get asked all the time. And most of my families come in to see me with a myth that, well, if our kids are not eating nutritious diet, then we're just going to supplement with a vitamin. So my take on this is, yes, if you need vitamin, if it's given as a prescription by your primary care physician or any physician for that matter, or ABC, yes, you can take that. But I don't believe in just supplementing a not so nutritious diet with a bunch of vitamin supplements. Mm-hmm. I really think it's important for us as adults to teach our next generation that a wholesome food is good enough. It has all the vitamins and minerals that you need. If you eat fruits and vegetables and whole grain and fiber in your diet, protein, dairy, then truly you don't need any additional supplements. It's very similar, and I know that we are going off the topic, but this is something that folks also ask me about melatonin. And melatonin is like this new big thing these days.
I'm really happy you're commenting on that because it's a little bit off, but I'm really curious about your take on melatonin.
Yes, because so everybody who comes to me.
I know of someone who gives their child melatonin every day. So I'm really curious what your take on this is.
Right. And these days they share this with kids that this is your sleep vitamin.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not agree with that verbiage, because it kind of tells the kids or gives a signal to the kids that this is something that is, you know, is a vitamin. I need it. So I want everybody to know that our body is built in a way that we produce our own melatonin. We don't really need external formulation of melatonin. Then I get this argument that, well, you know, it's structurally the same. And if your body is not producing it, if our kids are not sleeping, then our kids sleep well with melatonin. That's not a good idea. What you need to do is, if your kids are using screen time, and now, Chris, I'm going to tie it down with our topic again, that screen time is such a huge problem these days globally that we need to understand increased screen time negatively impacts the production of melatonin. And if you've had screen time within 4 or 5 hours of your actual bedtime, your kids are not going to sleep well. Now, I'm not saying that none of the kids who are on their screens just before bedtime sleep well. So it's not like not everybody is going to have that. But if your kid is having an issue with sleeping, then instead of starting them on melatonin, which you may think as a sleep vitamin, instead of that, what you need to do is cut down on the screen time. Before bedtime, I advise 4 to 5 hours before bedtime, there should be no screen time. And then your body starts producing naturally melatonin as a hormone. So, you know, your body is equipped with everything, unless you have a significant disorder and it's been prescribed by your pediatrician. There are kids who are not able to produce this hormone, but we are just talking in the general sense that these days melatonin is used as another vitamin supplement and is called a sleep vitamin. And I do not want this as, you know, being passed on in generations to the kids that this is just something that you can supplement with, because then you're taking away their capacity to sleep by themselves.
So what are the consequences then of, say, taking a melatonin tablet several times a week?
So truly,
what would be the downside?
Sure. So it's truly not a problem. It's not like a toxicity, because again, you know, melatonin, if you just look at the product, it doesn't negatively impact you, but it's kind of, you start depending on it. You start believing that if I don't take this medication, then I may not be able to sleep. And in younger age group, formation of these ideas and this kind of solidifying, it happens really fast. So if you instead focus on sleep hygiene, which is screen time or no caffeine or restricting water, increased water intake right before bedtime, making sure that your kid pees before bedtime, and it's a positive environment. You read stories, or you're in the mindset, you make sure that the lights are turned off. And a bedroom is used only for sleeping purposes rather than, you know, playing games or having long conversations. So if you use this sleep hygiene, then that's going to stick well, not just for your child, but the generations to come. So we want this to be passed on, or just the thought of, well, tomorrow I have to wake up, let's say at 6 a.m, and you start talking about, well, what time should be our bedtime so that you get at least 9 or 10 hours of sleep. So these are the conversations and these are the interventions that we need to have to practice sleep hygiene versus saying, well, my kid cannot sleep and, you know, let's just start him or her on melatonin. So to answer your question, truly not a deep impact in terms of your body. It's not that you have toxicity of melatonin, but the probability of your body then really used to producing the amount of melatonin that you need by itself can go down, or just this habit formation where you're kind of dependent on melatonin. And I'm not calling this as an addiction, but I'm saying mentally thinking that this is a vitamin and needing it is what we need to focus on.
You brought up some really interesting points. I don't know if you wanted to expand on the tolerance that people get. By tolerance, I mean, if you say drink coffee, some people, because they drink a lot of coffee, by the end of the week, they can drink coffee and they can have a cup of coffee before they go to bed and it's not going to do anything for them. So do you think the same thing can happen with melatonin and impact on, again, not just that child's health, but also just the generational habits that you're passing on to your children?
Yes, and I agree with you, Chris, that long-term usage should be curtailed for these reasons that you mentioned. And I look at it in a way that if you don't need it and if your body's producing it, why do you want to take it from outside when there are other interventions that you need to focus on? For example, let's say you're taking melatonin. Melatonin, again, understand the fact that melatonin only helps you in initiating sleep. It does not help you in sustaining sleep. So even if you think that you're taking melatonin, your kids are falling asleep, if your screen time is more, maybe your kids are waking up in the middle of the night and just staring at the ceiling and it's not helping. So melatonin is just a sleep initiator and it does not last too long. And so understanding that there are limitations of this hormone is truly important. And again, if you look at your body, if you keep getting melatonin from outside, you know, your body is going to sense that, well, I have too much of melatonin. I don't need to produce it as much because it's already there. So in a way, it slowly also impacts your body's natural capacity to produce the hormone. And you don't want to get to that point where you're losing ability to produce your own hormones that you so truly need for your body. So yes, I agree to your point. Not much of research is there in this point because again, the cohort sample is really less, you know, not, yes, it's catching up, but we don't have enough data to really comment in terms of literature and science. But if you look at the way things progress, this assumption is not completely incorrect.
What are your thoughts on the topic of things to avoid? What are your thoughts on protein shakes for kids? So, for example, I'm pretty active. I'll have a protein shake just to maintain the amount of protein that I need to take in for my amount of physical activity. But protein shakes on kids, and then also some people will bring up that the amount of protein, assuming you're not going to give like a child an adult size dose, but if you dose it to say a half gram per pound, et cetera. Is there a downside for protein shakes for kids? Because also there's the thought that it could, like, the protein could hurt their kidneys. Who knows? But that's what I'm asking you.
Absolutely. And as you would know, that protein is actually excreted through kidneys. And obviously you need to have good renal functioning, but it also depends on the load of protein that is given to kids. And I'll explain this to you with a really small, short example, that when we transition breastfeeding babies from breastfeeding to, let's say, bottle feeding. And when I say bottle feeding, I'm talking about formula. Now, breast milk is absolutely appropriate for your baby. But when you transition, understand that when you transition to formula, it's for the bigger population, right? It's not specific, customized to your baby's needs, but it is more broader and general. And so typically you see that when you switch over to formula or when you switch over from formula to cow's milk after, let's say, a year, if you do that, you will see that your kid will pee more initially when your baby is adjusting to that change from, let's say, from formula feeding or breastfeeding to cow's milk. That's because there's a different protein amount in those two milk types, and that's why your kidneys kind of adjust to it. So the downside is your child is going to either start peeing a lot or slowly, if the load is too much, your child's kidneys are not going to take that load. And we never want to get to that stage. My point is, why would you even want to give your child protein shakes, right? Why?
Because all they eat is ramen noodles.
So
they refuse to eat anything other than ramen noodles. They're better now, but they went through a phase where they would not eat anything in these ramen noodles. I'm actually asking for myself. So they would, if I tried putting like an egg in there, wouldn't touch the egg. If I tried putting vegetables in there, wouldn't touch it. Like pure ramen noodles.
So Chris, I'll tell you what you need to do is
starve them until they eat something else.
So I have a 4-year-old and now she's a big fan of ramen noodles too. And it was just more like, hey, noodles, you know, like once, but then it started increasing and that's how things start. But now what we do is we involve her in cooking. And it's important to understand that earlier that you start, you encourage kids to participate in meal prep, grocery list, shopping, cooking. When you start having fun, they start eating that item. So whatever that is, if you add a lot of vegetables in it, and if your child has emptied a bunch of vegetables in it, it's just fun for them to then eat it. And it's they are more likely to eat it if they've cooked it. So you got to make it a fun affair with kids to, you know, that participation is really important. Again, I always say to families that I support that how much to involve your kids really depends on upon you, but the sooner you do it, it's better. And you can start off with rinsing or adding or stirring, again, making sure that they're safe. That's the number one thing. But just because, you know, blanketly saying, no, I'm not going to have kids until they're 12 to enter in the kitchen, that's the wrong way, because you want them to, you know, get their hands into, if you're making bread, then I want them to like knead the dough and like have fun, you know, make their pizza, add lots of vegetables on it. So if you involve them, or you're making pasta, you just involve them into cooking, and that goes a long way. If you make it fun and you keep explaining and say, hey, we gotta have the different colors of the rainbow, or let's have, you know, like a green pasta, or like let's bring whole wheat pasta in our kitchen. So trying that, you know, trying even noodles, you can get whole grain noodles. So replacing first, if you start with baby steps, and then slowly also replacing that unhealthy or non-nutritious food with nutritious food, in the long run, it's going to be helpful. Yes, there are phases when kids completely shut off and, you know, they get to know the smallest thing that you have replaced. And I understand the struggle. But then what you do is, if you know that there's no choice, then you supplement it elsewhere. As in, you say, well, you got to eat this bowl of blueberries or, you know, strawberries, eating seasonal fruits. Taking them, so this is something that I have done for my kids as well, and I share this with families, is to take kids to on these different farms, and showing them where their food is coming from is also really helpful. You know, getting your own, picking your own fruits and vegetables is so much fun. You know, this is how we got our children into eating peas, you know, snap peas, going there, or getting your asparagus and going to your farms and getting your food from there. It's just a learning process. And you know, it may work in your family, it may not, but it's worth a shot.
I did try that, I got a tomato plant, and they're fascinated with the tomatoes and picking the tomatoes off the tomato plant.
And then have you really noticed that sometimes when you grow food home, it tastes different?
For sure. I grew up on a farm. Yeah, homegrown food tastes so much better.
Absolutely.
100%. So I think those are great points you made of what to eat. So rainbow foods, healthy foods, but what are some of the foods that ideally you should not make a regular part of your diet?
Absolutely. So I would say the no-go food items would be something that is processed, completely processed food. Steer away from that. Anything that is plain sugar, so desserts, you know, that's something that is just sweet, or juices. I call them as empty calories. Mm-hmm. There is sugar in it, or caffeinated products for kids. That's something that would be a no-go completely. In fact, I'll also share with your viewers that anything that is a packaged item should be a no-go. Try as far as possible to cook food at home. And if you hear the chatter about forever chemicals, I'd recently talked about it, and I've been really active on media in talking about these forever chemicals that are negatively impacting children's health, including pushing them into early puberty or pushing them into weight gain. So this is something that we need to focus on, is even if you think that this is healthy food, but the packaging has those chemicals. And if you, let's say for in a microwavable popcorn, you put them in, it's not about the popcorn inside, but it's the outside, it's the packaging that is more important, where you heat it in that. And then all of those forever chemicals get into your food. And the one negative, or the biggest negative of forever chemicals, is they're forever chemicals, which means they stay in your system. And right now, if you look at the census, United States, almost 90% of individuals have forever chemicals. So we need to stop the spread of forever chemicals, at least in our upcoming generations. And the one thing we can do is by getting fresh produce, cooking at home, ensuring that our kids, if they're spending a lot of time in school, which they do, this is summer, so it's different, but during school months, ensuring that we are giving them packed lunches from home, so that, you know, we are setting them up for success. This is something that I'm also very passionate about, you know, making sure that we are working on our school lunches. It's our responsibility to ensure that we are giving the right food and healthier food to our children. But things are not at that stage yet. We as our country are not at the stage yet where we are getting nutritious food in its entirety. So if your child is not at a healthy weight, then one of the interventions you can try doing is to pack lunches for school. Now, I understand that for some families, school lunches are the only source of nutrition. And I get that. So that is important. And so focusing, you know, encouraging fruits and vegetables, and I know that the tray is full, but not every kid is going to finish that. One of the things that I really, my heart pains to know that kids just get about 15 to 20 minutes in total to finish their lunch. So how can you really have a wholesome diet? You would then pick up something that is going to give you quick energy, and it's usually the carb that kids would pick up. You know, I would make the same choice if in a day that's my only meal. So definitely it's my urge to all your listeners to kind of stay active, be an advocate for children, where we try to expand the amount of time they get in their school recess so that they can have a wholesome food and finish them. Not every kid can finish food in 20 minutes. So kind of giving them more time. I don't know if you know, but you know, French schools do a great job with lunch hours, and Japan does a great job. And if you look at their childhood obesity rates, they are definitely lower than United States. And one of the big things that they
I want to talk about that. I really do. But you're going off a topic. I want to just expand a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So can you expand a little bit more on these forever chemicals? Because it's something it's nothing really that I deal with. And I know that people are like, well, could you talk a little bit more about these forever chemicals? Like, where are they coming from? And how do we prevent them from getting into our kids' bodies? And also, like, why are they called forever chemicals?
Okay, so forever chemicals are chemicals that they are PFAS. Okay, so PFAS are man-made chemicals, and they're typically found not just in the United States, but globally.
PFAS stands for what?
Okay, so polyfluoroalkyl substances.
It's a big name PFAS. That sounds not healthy.
So, polyfluoroalkyl or perfluoroalkyl substances.
So PFAS.
PFAS. So PFAS, as I was mentioning before, mm-hmm. these are man-made chemicals. Okay, they're not like routinely seen, and typically you will see it in oil and water repellents and coatings for like products such as cookware or carpets, textiles. So this is where we get them from. So anything that you get, you know, packaged items from your frozen section or elsewhere, you're going to have PFAS, different colors, different products. So these are basically endocrine disruptors. And the reason they're called as forever chemicals is because they do not break down when they're released in the environment. And that includes your body. So once they are in your body, they accumulate over time. Even excretion of PFAS is really a problem. And what it does is it kind of mimics our fatty acids. So our body has biological components called as fatty acids, and these are our building blocks of fat in our bodies. And these are available in our food and food that we eat. So what PFAS does, kind of mimics the activity of fatty acids, and then whatever that our hormones need fat for, they take this up, and then we don't have adequate production of hormones. So typically, if you look over, this negatively impacts the thyroid gland. So thyroid hormone production is something that is very easily disrupted by PFAS, and it has negative adverse effects. Liver functioning, kidney functioning, it also alters immune response. It increases risk of conditions such as ulcerative colitis, or even in older or fertile age group, it negatively impacts your fertility and reproductive health. If you have a large amount of PFAS in your body, it also increases the risk of birth defects, increases tumor and cancer risk. So if you heard what I just said, it has function on almost really everything, every aspect of your body. And that's why it's really important for us to prevent the consumption or intake of these potentially toxic chemicals in our body by avoiding these products completely.
So how do we avoid getting them in our bodies then?
Right. So one thing, like I said, you know, knowing what you're eating,
yes,
knowing what is going inside your body. And one thing that I follow is minimizing outside food. Yes, you can get your, you know, fruits and vegetables and your raw produce, but cook your own food. When you get it in a plastic bag, or when you, you know, when you get it packaged, then the chances are that you are exposed to PFAS. It's because they're widespread.
So I'm just looking this up as we're speaking. So plastic bottles, probably not a good source of water.
Yes, not a good. So typically, and I'll show you this. I have a steel bottle of water. Okay. I always take my water bottle and I store water in a steel container. So anything, even when I'm cooking, I use those copper bases with steel on versus the nonstick cookware.
So do you have any nonstick cookware?
I have no nonstick cookware. My house is not free. Okay. There was a time when PFAS was, I didn't know about it as much,
sure,
years ago. But when I got to know about this through my readings, I just chucked everything out. And so I'm proud to say that my house, you will not see any nonstick item.
Oh, and it's microwave popcorn bags.
Yes, so microwave popcorn bags also have PFAS. Again, it's not in the kernels, it's
the packaging.
So when you see colors, you know, that's typically where
doctors and cosmetics.
Yes, cosmetics, makeups, personal products.
Does that mean no makeup?
So I would love for it to be no makeup. So I'll tell you which, you know, if your listeners would, so I do my research, so I can tell you anything that says long lasting. Okay. So anything that says quote unquote wear resistant. So anything that is long lasting, that's something that you need to steer away from. And so this is what I do, right? So your viewers can see that for you, I have, for your audiences, I have put some makeup on.
But you do have makeup on. So what do you use?
Very rarely.
As a pediatric endocrinologist, what do you wear?
So I wear everything that is animal friendly, and I don't wear anything that is wear resistant or long lasting. And I like that because it wears off. Sometimes, you know, I'll tell you what I do now. When I was getting ready, it was just 10 minutes before our call time. And when we are done, I'm going to take it off right away. So the product stayed on my face for about 45 minutes or so. So yes, there is, it's difficult for us to completely stay away from it. But if you have to, then you need to know. Once you are aware of it, you will have strategies of not wearing it. And you've seen me otherwise, Chris, you know, this is probably the first time you're seeing me in makeup, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's for your audiences. Otherwise, I tend to let my face, my skin breathe, and I wear my skin, and I wear it with pride. And even if there are freckles or there are, you know, whatever aging things, I have taken them, I've embraced them, because that's part of growing. And once we start feeling proud of who we are, how we look, and we consider each one of us as individuals, and not use products to kind of hide your age or hide who you truly are, then, you know, you'll be successful. I also want to share with you something that I learned very recently is dental floss. And I know we all use dental floss, right? So you got to choose the uncoated nylon or
something. Oh, I like the coated ones. That's sad.
I used to, but now I'm steering away from that, because right? So that also has... that also has PFAS. One website that I'll recommend your viewers is, if you look at the Environmental Working Group, just, you know, Google it. That's a website that gives you a whole list of products that has PFAS. So food packaging, makeup, or repel, you know, whatever that is, like a carpet, you know, cleaners, you know, whatnot. So if you go on the website, then they have to give that information. So all manufacturers, and one thing I also want to share this is, there is a trend that people want to, I don't want to name countries, but you want to buy things from manufacturers that are outside of United States. And I want to let folks know that not every country other than the United States has restriction over PFAS. So imported products have a lot of PFAS because there is no regulation. And once you buy the products, they come here, they stay in United States soil and water, and they don't go anywhere. So when you're buying stuff from outside, make sure that you read, use the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering and Medicine. If you look at those websites, you're going to get all the information of PFAS and what to avoid, what not to avoid. But I think I was pretty much exhaustive in my discussion about PFAS.
Oh, no, I have one more question.
Yes,
go on. One more question about this. So what are your thoughts? So I get that cost is prohibitive because organic products are more expensive. Mm-hmm. But assuming you can afford it, I think I know where you'll go with this. But assuming you can afford it, and also I will say that eating at home is cheaper than eating out. Eating out is dramatically more expensive than cooking at home. What are your thoughts on organic versus non-organic food?
Oh boy, this is just again the same thing, right? The egg white and the egg yolk. So I don't want to get in too much of controversy onto this because I kind of get both sides, Chris, and you know what I'm going to say.
I know.
I'm a person that I believe if you do not take sides in certain situations, then you are in fact doing bad. Mm-hmm. And so this is a topic that I'm really passionate about health, especially children's health. Mm-hmm. So I am definitely going to say that, yes, organic food is good, but I condemn the price hikes on it because I certainly think that there is definitely a way that we can make this more accessible to folks. And this is where inequity comes in. This is the social determinant of health that I am so wired up when I see that there is not adequate access to good food. So yes and no at the same time. I wish I had a magic wand and I could make, you know, all the salads and all the fruits and vegetables way more accessible than what they are now. But let me tell you, at least from my side, and as you know, I do a lot of work in the community on this where I write many grants. I try to kind of siphon community funds back into community. And that's typically in form of food, where there's access of good food. So I want to just share an example with your folks here that we recently, with the help of Aspirus Hospital Foundation and Central Wisconsin Foundation, we were able to have farmers market event where we invited families and we gave them this book. So I was talking to you about this book, and this book is available. We just talked about it. Kids, come on, let's get healthy. A great resource for children about information on healthy lifestyle. And we also gave them money to go and get their favorite colored fruit and vegetable from the farmers market. So we ensured that we were not just giving them knowledge, but we were also giving them a chance to get access to that food. And within our community, we really have wonderful projects where we have boxes of fresh food and produce. Right now, it's restricted to those, or limited. I wouldn't say restricted, but limited to those who have nutrition issues, who have type 2 diabetes, or who have some health concerns. And they get this box free with the help of our hospital. But yes, my bigger aim is to expand it to all families. And we should definitely, all of us in healthcare, we need, and not just healthcare, but even our friends in politics, we need to make sure that we are collaboratively working for community health and making food that's really helpful and good for our community be available to them in a reasonable amount of finances.
Okay, so if you had to recommend, let's talk about low income then. Let's say you have someone, they're like single parent working really hard, but they want to create a healthy meal for their kids. Mm-hmm. And they're like, organic is really, really expensive. But the flip side is, but I get it, like parents working really hard, it's easy to just go to like fast food, pick up a fast food dinner, give it to their kids. And but nothing good comes of that. Now, you can go on Amazon and buy a 50-pound bag of rice, which would last a really, really long time. Can you recommend a source or simple recipes or where they can find information on how they can make healthy foods for their kids that at a very reasonable price point?
That's a great question. And I mean, there are tons and tons of resources available that talk about healthy eating. I would recommend your listeners, viewers, to see what really resonates with them in terms of, you know, whether they're plant-based or what kind of diet they like. It's really a choice. But one big thing I want to share with them is if you meal prep and if you plan ahead for the week, then cooking is not that challenging. You know, I do it. We are a two-physician whole family and both work crazy hours, but we seldom eat outside. We cook at home. And the way we do it is we plan everything. We plan our meals. One additional thing I can share is how do you cook your meals? So I have an Instapot. I don't know if you have it at home, but I find it really helpful there. I can time it. And I totally get families who are in a single parents leave for work early in the morning, pick up kids, and well, on the way in, get food because there's no time to cook. But if you use certain resources, they can time your food and you can cook you when you come home, you're going to have a delicious meal all set. So having those one pot meals where it reduces your time, you know, put everything in, finally, you know, it's going to be nutritious, but make sure that you how you cook. So you shouldn't be frying your food. So you know, steaming, boiling, or air fryers are great if you want to, you know, you want to have fries, but if you air fry them, then that's helpful. So having those nutritious choices, because you know, technology is available. If we try to use it to our benefit, we can, and we can do it in a shorter span of time. So I think just smart thinking of approaching this problem of healthy eating in a conscious way and in a positive way, where we say we want to do it versus focusing on the challenges that are preventing us from doing it. I totally get your point about organic versus non-organic food. And I'll tell you honestly, I'm not somebody who buys organic food every time. No, I don't. Yes, I go to farms and I get that, you know, from food from there, but I'm not somebody who's like, oh, that's it, organic food and nothing else. Yes, I do it because even if it's non-organic, it's the second best thing, right? So always making a choice. We all have choices. And if we are able to make that healthy choice for us in the long run, it's going to be helpful. So meal prepping, meal packing, and not being ashamed of that. I know that at one point of time, my school going kid was embarrassed of, you know, taking home cooked meals, and because it's peer pressure, right? Everybody wants to eat at school, and there is a lot of peer pressure. But then as parents, we have to share with them that no, you know, when to succumb to peer, we should never succumb to peer pressure, but to kind of influence your peers as well is so important. And that is why we need to have these good discussions about healthy eating or anything that is related to health at school, not just in the four walls of the hospital, but at school, at home, at different avenues such as your platform, where more and more discussions on topics related to health should happen outside of the four walls of the hospital so that this is more, you know, normal. It's okay. You know, I pack my lunch from home. In fact, there was a point when my husband used to get frustrated. We used to be when we went out, and I used to come up with my box of salad and my home cooked meal, and they would be like, you know, "Mom, can you give a break? You know, let's eat outside." So yes, I know the balance, but at the same time, you know, peer pressure begins at home. So it's really important for you to do what is right for your health and for your family, but at the same time, you know, it's give some, take some, right? So yes, you can definitely eat that birthday cake. You can definitely have a nice party. You can celebrate because food brings us together and it's part of our culture, tradition, and celebration. So definitely participate in that. But be conscious for that day when you make an unhealthy choice, try or non-nutritious choice. Make sure that you, for the most part in the week, continue to be on track with your nutritious choices. As long as you do that and you're aware, and you know, you would definitely make that change, you and your family.
Well thought out answer. And then to go back to what you were talking about before, there's a large obesity epidemic in the United States, but you don't really see that as common in other countries. And you were going into that before I diverted you back to the PFAs. But how do kids eat in other countries versus the United States?
Yes, so I've been doing a lot of reading with that. And so I gave you examples of two countries, France and Japan, that really resonate with me. And I wish we can get some of those things in our school lunches here in the United States. And so I'll share with you what France does is it spends about 2 hours and 2 hours for lunch. And not all schools, but most schools, where kids eat slow, as in it's a four course meal, and they all come together and they enjoy the
meal. For 2 hours?
Yes, for 2 hours. Even now, if you go to any European country, mm-hmm. and I still have so many friends, I worked in England for about 3-4 years, and I used to meet a lot of folks from Europe, and they used to share this with us that, yeah, 2 hours, it was the siesta time, right? So, you know, that's important. We cannot be always on the go. We need to know when to slow down, and we got to slow down in the day. I'm not saying slowing down is lazy, but slowing down could be 10 minutes of quick meditation, right? Mm-hmm. It could be something that is mindfulness for somebody. Or when it comes to food, instead of just rushing to eat and finish your meal, just being slow, just being more mindful of that time where you're eating to, you know, it's like you're doing something good to your body versus doing it, quick in a jiffy and want to move on to something else. So that is really important. In Japan, at schools, kids are taught how to make their meals. And it's different meals. And they do everything from the beginning to end. So cleaning up, or laying their table, setting the table up, getting all, you know, family, friends together.
At what age?
All ages. This is at all ages, which I so love.
I feel like we need higher expectations for, I'm going to speak for my children. I think we need higher expectations for my children.
We need to do away with screen times, right? We need to sit together as a family. It's so important to focus on that. And then everybody together cleans up. So food is such an important thing. And I think this should happen at school. Why? Because our kids spend like 8 to 9 hours outside of our homes, and they learn so much, and they learn as a group. When you learn as a group, not as parents, mm-hmm. you know, we can do whatever we do at home, that, you know, sit together, no screen time, but that is still looked as rules, right? Mm-hmm. It is still looked at as, well, this is the house rule. But when it happens at school, you change the entire nation. Mm-hmm. When it's happening at school, it's learning. So mm-hmm. education should not be just restricted with reading, math, science, and social studies, and art, and all that. It should also include our day-to-day things. Yes, we do a great job with manners, etiquettes, right? We do the please and thank yous. But at the same time, for us as a country in the United States, we need to also teach our younger generation that, you know, food is something that is a huge part of our growing up and our learning and our life. And that's why if we do it right, yes, even if it's socioeconomic differences or access issues, at least we'll learn to slow down. We'll learn to eat a wholesome meal. We will learn to finish that apple that's there. But you know how it goes, right? In school, like if it's just 15 minutes, your teacher who's subbing around would say, you know, take a bite. But then what happens of that apple? Maybe it's just thrown in trash. Some schools have now started to develop projects where they carry the fruits that are not used and then are recycled and reused again or given to Meals on Wheels and many other programs. But I wish that we gave them that extra 10 minutes to the kid who couldn't finish the apple. That's fine. You know, sit here, finish your apple because it's important. Mm-hmm. Yes, everything is important. You know, everything is so slotted in time slots. But I really think that we as a country, we need to do a lot with our school lunches. The time that children spend at schools should be positively utilized for learning these skills. And as family at home, we need to have these discussions about nutritious diet. You know, what is important? This should be a constant thing. It should be a constant learning curve for children so that they understand the importance of food at home, at school. And that discussion is not restricted at their annual well-child visit with their pediatrician.
Okay, so if you're willing to share, what is an average meal from the pediatric endocrinologist for your kids, breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Average meal.
Okay, so breakfast, I would definitely suggest including some sort of protein. So maybe one egg, depending on how old your child is. So 1 to 2 eggs and maybe a toast. Whole wheat, whole grain toast. And you can mix and match. Either you can be monotonous. What I will say don't do is having those frosted flakes, frosted cereal.
What's your take on the standard frosted flake cereal breakfast?
Yes, so no frosted flakes, no added sugar. You can have the non-frosted version. Mm-hmm. And you can add, depending on how old you are, again, 1%, 2% milk, or if you're underweight, because we really focus on overweight children, right? But we also need to address underweight. So it also depends on what your needs are, and great time to touch base with your doctor. But as a general, no sugar, frosted flakes of cereal, but just regular whole grain cereal with milk is okay. So don't get used to that sugary taste. That's one thing. Second thing is water. Drink a lot of water during the day. No soda, no juice. And I hear a lot about, this is sugar free, but it has aspartame. So I want.
Oh, the news came out that that's like cancerous now. That's like the latest rage.
So,
Diet Coke, cancerous.
Right. So we should not say, well, it's not just about the calories. And I want to tell folks, because this is something that there's always an argument in my clinic where people say, but we drink diet soda or whatever, diet, whatever. And I say, no, your brain, yes, you don't see it as fat, but your brain perceives it as sweet and it produces the same hormones that it would produce when you eat sugar. Mm-hmm. So it's really important for folks to, again, go back to basics and focus on just plain water. You honestly do not need flavored water. You don't. And you should steer. It's just like melatonin, right? Why do you? It's water. Your body is made of water. You don't need flavored water. If you are so, you just have to do it, then just, cut two pieces of cucumber or strawberry or whatever, lemon, squeeze lemon and or ginger. Have that, but don't say this is whatever. I don't want to name different brands here, but I know folks say, well, this is the healthier version. It's not. So anything that is that's diet free is not. So focus more on water. Snack time, I would say healthy fruits and vegetables in between.
Oh wait, one more question for breakfast. I love the controversial questions I'm asking you. Mm-hmm. So what's your take on milk? That's a messy one too. But yes. Milk, kids, milk for adults.
Yes. So for adults, I would say fat-free or 1%, 2%. Whole milk under 2 years. If you're under 2 years, you can have whole milk. At 2 years, you can make the transition to 2% or 1%, depending on what your general needs are. Dairy is important, so at least having 3 cups of or 3 servings of dairy, you can mix and match with either yogurt, cheese, or milk, but just 3 servings. So depends.
So why is whole milk bad? Because I've heard a lot of arguments that whole milk is actually better than like the 1%, 2% skim, etc.
Right. So what American Academy of Pediatrics recommends is to make the switch from whole milk to 2% at the age group of 2, because we wanna be preemptive in addressing childhood obesity. So there are many kids who drink a lot of milk in the day. So anywhere ranging from 1 cup to 8 cups, right? So it's like water. They drink milk substituting it for water, and that's sure. not what is needed. So what it does is, if you drink whole milk, it's going to keep you keep that satiety for longer, right? So you want to focus on eating those meals. You just need that amount of calorie and, you know, to fill you in for breakfast so that you can still have your lunch and dinner. You cannot only drink milk and not eat nutrition from other important parts of your meal. So restricting it is good in the long run. Then this is for breakfast, right? So you can have a snack. Snack, I always say fresh fruit. And I know at school, it's usually crackers or, you know, something of that sort, or milk. But I definitely support having a fresh fruit or vegetable. If you've not had milk during your breakfast, then you can have milk during that snack time. Lunchtime, again, having all those four things that I talked about. So fruits, vegetables, whole grain cereal, like whole grain, whatever, you know, that you can, any component. And then protein, which could be, again, I want to emphasize plant-based as well as meat. And if it's meat, then avoid red meat. Try lean meat as far as possible. So turkey is a good choice. But then not those highly salted ones, right? Highly processed ones. Try the ones that you, if you cook at home, you can really limit the amount of salt in it. So anything that is too salty is not something that I would recommend. And finishing that meal, and again, water to drink with your lunch. So that's your lunch. If you want second servings, it's important to just focus on vegetables or fruits, not so much for second servings, but salads and vegetables. Again, when I say vegetables, I've heard, you know, so many kids will be like, I want corn, I want potatoes. Well, that's not what I'm saying. You know, we want to focus on your calories and the amount of carbs. So if you're eating vegetables, then make sure that you're eating at least 3 to 4 servings of vegetables in a day, and fruits about 2 to 3 servings in a day, and a total of 5 servings of fruits and vegetables in a day, which you can spread across from breakfast, lunch, dinner, or in between snack times. And then evening snack, I would again say something that is more fresh, again, fresh fruit or vegetable, and dinner, again, a wholesome plate. Really focus on serving sizes that are available. In the book, we talk about serving sizes. You don't always need a measuring cup, but if you have a measuring cup, use it and show your kids where your measuring cups are, and bring them in when you're serving. Let them plate their food and using the measuring cups. It's so much fun. I do that at home, and it's a lot of fun, right, when they're measuring for the entire family. So it's a lot of fun when they do that. And so what you can do is, if you don't have it, use your hand. So a fistful of, we talked about rice, you talked about, you know, 20 pounds of rice, right? So if there's no other choice and you have to eat white rice, I would recommend replacing it, substituting it with either wild rice, brown rice, or some other form, you know, of long grain rice, not the short grain, not the shortened, but the long grain that is very similar to calorie count, but it's slow release. So it's going to slowly release the sugar in your body. If you overcook your rice, then it's going to give you rapid release of sugar in your body, and your, you know, the spike that it's going to cause, sugar spike, is going to go up and down. So you're still going to be feeling hungry in after 2 or 3 hours, but your body has needed to do a lot of work in terms of producing insulin. That's how type 2 diabetes happens, when you're choosing the incorrect food. But if you have to choose white rice, then limit it to the size of your fist, or, you know, so a palm size would be meat. Any meat you eat would be palm size. Fist would be your grain, whatever grain that you choose. Fruits and vegetables, I already told you about 2 to 3 servings of fruits and vegetables. And dairy is, again, 1 cup, 3 servings in a day. And if you mix and match, that's great. Now, if you ask me why dairy is important, why milk is important, because in the United States, it has vitamin D. So that's why I like to advise vitamin D, or because yogurt and cheese, not every brand would have vitamin D added to it. So that's why the milk is important. Again, for growing years, calcium and vitamin D is an important source for bone mineralization, keeping your bones strong. So that's why we need that dairy part. And like we talked about, having nuts, in your handful of nuts in your diet. You can, in one of the snack times in between the meals, you can use just a handful of nuts. I know there are many picky eaters. And if you give small, but really calorie-rich and nutrition-rich choices, then they eat it and it's good for them. So maybe an avocado or other fruits, you know, and vegetables would be really beneficial. And really being more aware of sources of, you know, so vitamin C, it's, you know, broccoli, not everything is an orange, right? So if you don't like orange, that's not the only source of vitamin C. And broccoli has a lot of vitamin C in it by itself as well. So understanding the different sources of minerals and different items that your body needs will make you cut down the mundane routine of eating the same thing over and over again, but having a balanced, like, over the week diet where you, when you plan it, you see that, hey, I have a rainbow. So talking about a rainbow, we did a project a couple of months ago in 9 schools of Stevens Point School District, where I personally went and talked to kids about eating a rainbow and what that meant. And we had a lot of fun games and activities, and we, you know, kind of inculcated that habit of eating fruits and vegetables from the colors of the rainbow, to the extent that when I meet people now, in when I go out in the market or elsewhere, you know, they're like, well, it's not just our kids, but they make sure that we as adults also eat the colors of the rainbow. So I think that's the success story, when kids start teaching adults. Mm-hmm. And so that is why we need to have these conversations where they're in their formative years, right? So whatever they see, they will follow. And one thing I tell everybody is, don't just ask the kids to not eat the bag of chips. If you are buying it and mm-hmm. you are eating it and you are not being the true role model for them, it's all going in vain, right? Then it only becomes a rule, not a way of life. Here, mm-hmm. what you need to do is show kids that this is our way of life, a healthy life. So that is what is important, where you kind of focus on the why as well and tell kids what is eating healthy truly do in their future. It's going to make them be more focused at school. You know, many kids skip breakfast these days, but then telling them that if you eat it, you're going to be more focused, you're going to be more attentive, you're going to enjoy, you're going to not be sick. So increasing your immunity and your bodily function, and really living life to the fullest. I think as adults, not just as physicians, Chris, but as adults, as parents, we owe this to our next generation, where we show them how to live their life at the fullest. You know, we've made mistakes. Maybe our parents made mistakes in raising us or not telling us the importance of nutritious diet, and because not every family came through the same thing. I know my family was the only thing we ate was plant-based diet. We mm-hmm. rarely ate meat. Things changed. So many of my family, you know, members, friends say, well, you were raised differently and we weren't. And so I say, no, but then yes, if our parents made mistakes, we're not going to carry that on, right? We need to be role models to our children. We need to do the right thing. If our children still choose to do something differently, at least you can sleep well at night saying, well, you know, you did the right thing as a parent. So one thing, another thing, you and I keep coming back to your family when you say, you know, this is what they do. One thing, Chris, you need to notice is, even if it's a pattern, still keep doing the interventions, because someday that intervention will be picked up. For example, if your child does not like avocado and eats only ramen noodles, every day you give something else and you say, this, it's okay, one bite. That's fine. Just try it. Be adventurous. And you have like reward charts. That's what the book talks about, that in a week, how many different colors of the rainbow did you eat? Or did you try a blue colored item today? So something like that, where it's more interactive and it's more fun for the kids and making them more quote unquote adventurous to try new things. Mm-hmm. And then one day they'll start liking the taste, right? And they'll be surprised that, oh my God, you know, why, Dad, why did you not give this to me before? But you just need to be at that age to agree that, Dad, you're doing something good for me. So don't lose hope, all the listeners as well as parents. If you're struggling with kids in terms of their diet, then don't lose hope. Just make sure that you are doing the right thing and you are being a role model and showing them why you're doing it. It cannot just be a family rule. It's going to be a way of life, so that they live a happy and a healthy life.
I think that's a perfect summary of this podcast. Thank you so much for sharing your time and expertise. I think we covered a lot of great topics as far as food, lifestyle, and really changing the food choices that we make with our kids, which will then have generational impact. So again, thank you so much for taking the time for the podcast.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ferguson. And thank you so much for all the listeners. Looking forward to maybe another topic and another
discussion. Oh, for sure. And then your book will be in the show notes as well for anyone that's interested.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and visit the Get Healthy 360 Facebook page. We are always looking for feedback and new story ideas. Thanks again, and see you next time.